So now we can take a look at all the numbers. This is where we've been heading for this. In the population, we act as if the null is true or the null is false. We're going to make a decision. If the null is true, correctly retaining the null, that probability is 1 minus alpha. If we retain the null,
what was alpha?
Alpha is the same as the p. So, if the null is true, the probability of retaining the null is 95%. The probability of rejecting the null is 5%. Why? Because of our rule. Remember the buying sodas. We know that 10, 11, or 12 could happen, but when they happen, they're less than 5% of the time. We pull out the stick, we get our money back. We're going to be wrong 5% of the time. Does that make sense? If we use a 5% rule, we're going to be wrong 5% of the time. So when the null is true, the 100% of the time that the null is true is going to divide up into 5% false alarms and 95% correct retentions. Make sense? When the null is false, it's going to divide up into power, rejecting the null when we should reject the null, and type 2 error. And notice that its type 2 error is beta.
What is beta?
Type 2 error. Just A stands for, alpha stands for type 1 error, beta stands for type 2 error.
But alpha stood for P.
Which is the probability of a type 1 error. Okay? Beta is the probability of getting it wrong. 1 minus beta is the probability of getting it right, which is our power. So now we have a number for everything. The probability of getting it wrong is alpha, is P, usually 0.05. is our minimum standard. The probability of getting it wrong is our probability of a type 2 error, which is 1 minus power. So, let's play with this. If you reject the null, type 1 and type 3 statistical errors are possible. If you reject the null, you're saying there is a particular effect, there might not be an effect, false alarm, or there might be an effect, but not your effect. Okay? Type 3. P is the probability of a type 1 error. The probability of a type 3 error is not reasonably estimable. You have to know so much information about what the effect size is to calculate the probability of a type 3 error that you wouldn't be running the study anymore. Because you know what the effect size is. And you must have had enough power because you rejected the null. So when you reject the null, you don't have to worry about type 2 errors. You had enough power. You can't make a false alarm. I'm sorry. You can't miss something when you say you found something. If you retain the null, you need to determine the probability of a type 2 error. You need to compute the effect size, you need to compute the sample size, determine power, and the probability of a type 2 error is 1 minus the power. This is what I call the dance of the type 2 error. Okay? Because whenever you retain the null, you got to do a little dance. You got to go find R, you got to find S, you got to find power. Finally, 1 minus power is the probability of a type 2 error. It's not like P. P's nice. P's just sitting there. Probability of a type 1 error. P2, you got to go dancing for it. Likely to decide there's a problem, that there's a power problem. Whenever you retain the null, you're probably going to find out that you have a power problem. Unless the effect size is so small, then even if it's significant, it would not be interesting. Now, in order to make sure that you've learned how to invoke this rule, I have to make up a number. I'm going to use Cohen's number of 0.1. And here's the rule we'll use. If the effect size is less than 0.1 and not significant, we're going to say it's probably not a power problem. We're going to say the reason that we retain the null is because there isn't much of an effect there. If the effect size is 0.1 or larger and we retain the null, we're going to say it's a power problem. Does that make sense? Now, what rule will you use in your own back home in your own research areas? Don't know. And it's always fun to ask your advisor and watch them hem and haw. Well, I don't know. depends. On what? Stuff. Okay. This is how data analysts torture researchers. Oops. All right. You've got an R with 58 degrees of freedom. P is 0.2, I'm sorry, R is 0.25. P is exactly 0.05. Now, according to our rule, we would retain the null, because it has to be less than 0.05. And one of the things we're going to see is how silly that rule might be. If you decide to reject the null, if you decided to reject the null, because, hey, you're free-thinking people. If I reject the null, what's the chance that I'm committing a type 1 error? 5%. Make sense? Because P is the probability of committing a type 1 error if you reject the null for those data. All right. If I decide to reject the null, what's the probability of a type 3 error? Is there a chance of a type 3 error?
Yeah.
Yeah. But we can't calculate it. Or we're not going to calculate it. If we decide to reject the null, what's the chance I'm committing a type 2 error?
None.
Exactly zero. It is physically impossible to reject the null and have a miss. The two can't go together. All right, so far so good. If I decide to retain the null, what's my chance of committing a type 1 error?
None.
Can't happen. Can't say there's no effect and false alarm. Does that make sense? Zeros are nice. Zeros are happy. Zeros are friendly. If I decide to retain the null, what's the chance I'm committing a type 3 error?
None.
Okay, it's not as nasty as you thought it was going to be, until now. If I decide to retain the null, what's the chance I'm committing a type 2 error? Put on your slippers, it's time to do the dance. We have an effect size of 0.25. We have an S of 6.0, 2 plus the degrees of freedom. If you go to the power table with S of 60 and an effect size of 0.25, you come up with about a power of 0.5. If power is 0.5, the probability of a type 2 error is 50% or 0.5. Now, just for fun, let's recognize what we've done here according to our rules. If we reject the null, we got a 5% chance of being wrong. If we retain the null, we have a 50% chance of being wrong, but we are required by edict to retain this null. This works every time. Every time P is 0.05 and alpha is 0.05, beta is 0.5. You can sit there and look right down through the diagonal of the power table, right down through the diagonal of every critical value table in any statistic ever. By the way, I don't know why, but statisticians tend to not know this. Okay? And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Because when you're arguing over that, oh, I got a 0.051, or I got a 0.049999999, that's less than 5. Live with it. Don't round, report all the nines. But when you get an 051, okay, and depending upon what research area you're in and who you're working with, you may do the dance of the marginal effect. There's a couple different dances we do. We do the dance of the type 2 error. We also do the dance of the marginal effect. Keep in mind that if you have a power problem, and that's why you're retaining the null, you got a 5% chance of an alpha, you got a 50% chance of a beta error with exactly the same data. Just to let you know how strange the system is in which we live. All right, so what I've done here is I've gathered together all of the stuff that we've talked about. Mean difference. Most basic description and inference, the problem is across dependent variable scales, it's hard to make them comparable. and it's very difficult to translate from a mean difference to whether or not you trust that effect. So we have F and chi-square values. Integrates effect size, variability, and sample size, but most of the time we don't look at F and say whether we have a large or small effect. Look at chi-square, large or small effect. They're all designed to get p-values. Then we have effect sizes. How big is the effect, considering the variability, but without considering sample size or power? If we start down at the other end, we have the post-hoc power analysis. Do we have enough power to make a decent decision? What's the probability of a type 2 error? P-value, what's the probability of committing a type 1 error? These are the two things we need to assess significance. And sitting right in the middle, that combination of an effect size estimate and a statistical decision basis is our friend, the confidence interval. Because you take anything that you care about, whether it's a mean difference, or an effect size, and you take your sample size into account, and you say, what's the interval within which we think the population value really occurs? If it doesn't include the null value, you reject the null. If it does, you do. And at the same time, it gives you an idea of how big that effect may be at its smallest end and its largest end. In that sense, it's really a shame that confidence intervals aren't used more, because they bring together all the best information from an effect size and from a significance test. And I don't even like confidence intervals, because they're a total pain in the ass to work with, but they are sweet.